Welcome back, Steve.
Justin.
We're here.
We are.
What up, dude? Hey,
what's going
on? Just proud. I'm good. And I'm just proud because we're actually recording an episode within a week of seeing a new movie.
I know.
A review. Dude, it's amazing. Usually we're waiting a solid, you know, month, 5 weeks at least. So it's, yeah, dude, we're out here getting ready to review what I think was both of our most anticipated movie of MCU of the last, you know, I don't know, at least now moving forward, at least until the next Avengers come out, right? At least for me, let me just rewind and restate that. When they announced a bunch of the Phase 4 and Phase 5 movies after Infinity War and Endgame, and they announced that Kang was going to be the big bad, and that Kang was going to first be introduced in Quantumania, right, which he ended up being introduced in Loki, but we didn't know that at the time.
I mean, sort of. We can get into the nitty-gritty about that later, but
yeah.
Go on.
But when it was initially announced that he was going to be introduced in Quantumania, that took it and immediately shot this movie to the top of my most anticipated. So more than Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, more than Love and Thunder, more than Wakanda Forever. And obviously this was before those movies came out and we actually saw them. And so, yeah, I was very excited going into this movie, and I'm excited to do a review on it because now we've seen it. And yeah, dude, it's going to be – I got a lot of thoughts on this movie. I'm trying to think of a good place to start. So I think that was the same thing that you said as well when we first got on the phone after seeing this movie. You were like, I have so many thoughts on this.
So many. Yeah, I was going to say we surely have seen this movie, and we got a lot to say about it. So – yeah, I mean, let's just jump right into it. I also want to start by saying I'm proud of us for kind of being on top of a review here. Some YouTube channels or other reviewers that I follow have not put out their reviews for this movie yet, and perhaps they're just being respectful of, you know, spoilers, because I listen to a lot of spoiler reviews after the fact. But it hasn't even been a full week since Quantumania premiered last Thursday at the time of recording this. So yeah, look at us. Hey, we're ahead of the game for once in our lives. Maybe it'll be a new pattern.
That is a good point to bring up, because this is going to be a full spoiler review.
Oh yeah.
We are not the type of people that are going to talk in vague terms about things.
No.
We're going to get into the deep specifics of what we liked and did not like.
Yes.
And so if you don't want it to be spoiled, well, you should still listen and just get it spoiled, because if you leave, you'll probably forget to come back and listen, and we need those streams. So,
yeah, it's what our livelihood is built around, basically.
Exactly.
But yeah, this is going to be super spoiler-filled. Justin and I have talked in the past about how we try to avoid spoilers up until the very minute that we go see big anticipated movies. But once we see them, we obviously have to discuss everything in depth. So this will be full spoiler review. Well, without much further ado, let's spoil this movie. First thought is I loved half of this movie. Every single second that Jonathan Majors' Kang the Conqueror was on screen was incredible. I fully bought into him being like a next level threat for not only Ant-Man and the Wasp and old Ant-Man and old the Wasp in this movie, but the Avengers in the future. I totally was enraptured by every second he was on screen. His performance was incredible. Jonathan Majors is that dude. He's next up in terms of A-list complete stud Hollywood action star, in my opinion. I mean, he's had a crazy run even over the last few months. I think I saw a movie a while ago where three trailers back to back to back were for Devotion, Quantumania, and Creed 3, which all three are starring Jonathan Majors. And it was pretty crazy to see those trailers back to back to back. But man, it just shows the star trajectory he's headed on. And I'm looking forward to seeing a lot more of him. There's a lot more that I liked about this movie, but I will say, the times where he wasn't on screen, I was way less interested in the story and the characters and everything else that was going on. it to me was like basically two different movies when Kang was on screen and when he was not. And I think sometimes that can be good where you have, you know, a shift in tone depending on who's on screen. But for this movie, it was more than that. It was like a clear shift in quality of, you know, writing and dialogue and basically everything. I think that without Kang on screen, it was a significant step down. And yeah, I got more to say, but I don't want to rip into this movie too much. Because I, like I said, I did really love Jonathan Majors as Kang. I thought he and Michelle Pfeiffer had great chemistry. She was another standout of the movie acting wise. Her character kind of annoyed me, but I thought her performance was also excellent. Even Paul Rudd is also given a great performance here as Scott Lang. I was a little thrown off by Michael Douglas in this movie. His performance as Hank Pym just seemed like very aloof. Even from the start, he seemed very cavalier with Pym particles, when in the past he's been super protective of them, and rightfully so. But he gives control of them to Scott Lang's like delinquent 15-year-old daughter for some reason. I don't know. Even though she's not really his own granddaughter. That made no sense to me. I'll talk about Cassie more in a sec also, because she was easily my least favorite part of the movie. And then Evangeline Lilly to round out the main cast. I didn't have a problem with her in this movie at all. I just think that her role got written right into the back seat. Honestly, kind of into the trunk of this movie. She had almost nothing to do. Even her kind of, what was supposed to be kind of her big moment at the end, ended up not being important. And she was just kind of scenery for the entire time. So, out of the six members of the main cast, I would say three of them did an excellent job. Two of them were there, and one was just like so annoying. I don't want to. I'll talk about more about Cassie, but I want to hear your initial thoughts on the movie overall.
Yeah. Well, I thought that it was fine. I thought it was a fine movie. I didn't come out of it with any super strong emotions either way. I didn't walk out of it saying this is awesome. I didn't walk out of it saying this was bad or not worth my money or anything like that. It was just fine. And that was a bit disappointing given what I was hoping out of the movie. I think like you, I really liked half the movie. For me, it wasn't even so much like Kang versus not Kang, but it was more, didn't really like the first 10% of the movie, the setup and them getting into the quantum realm was very forced, didn't really make a whole lot of sense. Then I liked the middle, maybe 15% of the way through to about 70% of the way through. And then the last 30%, like the final action set and to the end, just completely fell off the rails, in my opinion. And it wasn't enough to tank the movie as a whole, because I think there was a lot of good stuff in it. Like you said, Kang was awesome for the most part. There were some things that I didn't love about him, but for the most part, he was awesome. And you're right, definitely the best part of the movie. There was just a lot of generic superhero stuff that, you know, the classic science mumbo-jumbo that works exactly how they need it to for the plot and doesn't really make sense, but that's, you know, standard. And the action overall was like good, not amazing, not terrible. The CGI on the whole, with a couple notable exceptions that you probably immediately know of, was like good enough, not amazing, not, you know, offensive, again, other than a couple moments.
Oh yeah, we'll talk about it. I know exactly what you're getting at, and we'll talk
about everybody knows about it. So it just overall was like, I walked out of it, I was like, it was good, or good enough, I guess was the term that I was using. So nothing that I was rushing to go see again, but nothing that I was like disappointed that I had seen it. So
yeah,
I have strong opinions on a lot of things that happened, but I don't have a strong opinion on the movie as a whole. I just left and I was like, okay, I saw it. It was kind of how I felt after walking out of Black Adam, you know, where I was like, okay, you know, I watched it. It was a movie. I'm not mad about it, but I'm not going to like go see it again or run to my friends and say, you have to watch this either, you know, although yeah. I'd be more likely for this because this actually is going to mean something with future movies. And as you said so nicely in our Oscars pod last week, the movie that means absolutely nothing was Black Adam. So at least this is going to tie into something. So I guess people should watch it at least because of that. But it wouldn't be like a strong recommend to go spend $18 or whatever on a ticket for someone who's not already a big Marvel fan.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting point that you're making. And to be honest, it's really tough to see just like a casual moviegoer getting into the Marvel Cinematic Universe at this point. Like, they're, let me check the list here. What are they, 30 movies deep at this point? I mean,
yeah, I think this was that, 31.
That, give or take. Yeah, 29, 30 would have been Black Panther in the fall, and then this is 31. So, I mean, again, Marvel has like long since forgotten about the casual moviegoer, and you know, they have a huge fan base, obviously. But I mean, if you're invested in the MCU at this point, this is kind of a must see for the implications of the story going forward alone. But it's interesting the comparison that you draw to Black Adam, and the more I think about it, I don't even know if that's really super off base. Like, Black Adam to me was a surprise because I actually quite enjoyed the movie way more than I thought it would. My expectations for that were like basement level. Whereas I tried to keep my expectations tempered for Quantumania, and it was just kind of sort of middle of the road. I won't be able to rank this in my list until I, you know, see it a couple more times. But my initial viewing probably has it in the bottom third, like low 20s, high teens potentially. If you listen to our last episode and the ones before that, you know that we absolutely ripped Love and Thunder a new one. And this movie is nowhere close to as bad as Love and Thunder. Like, not even in the same quantum verse. We'll say that. How about that?
Agreed.
But yeah, I mean, I'd say, I don't know, maybe Black Adam and this movie are even of like similar quality, aside from the performances of the main cast, which obviously, you know, that's a big factor. But yeah, I just felt like a little off leaving the theater after this movie because I really wanted it to be killer, you know? I wanted this to be an absolute banger of the movie. And for half of it, it really was. And I, again, the Kang stuff is really what sold me on this movie. Because I know that he's going to be a really big part of the MCU moving forward for like the entire next two phases. So I really needed this movie to nail Kang more than I needed it to be a great movie on its own. And it is a movie full of really good things, but I don't think it's necessarily a really good movie on its own, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the whole, one of my biggest issues with the movie was that it just seemed like a lot of random things happened. It was just kind of one relatively goofy scenario or something just happened. Okay, now suddenly the buildings can move. And now we go to another location and the buildings don't move. And now we go to another location and the ants have lived for thousands of years and made a class two society.
Don't even get me started.
Now we go here and there's a probability field magically. And now we go here. And it's just like, it seemed like there was not a whole lot of logic or consistency to like what the heck was going on. And things just kind of happened for jokes, or they happened for, because they couldn't find a way out of the plot. Like, they made Kang strong enough that their only way of beating him was for him to completely forget all of his powers and not use them. Second of all, leave them undefended in an easily escapable situation, and then C, to have magic ants that have lived for thousands of years. Like,
oh my, yeah. Like, it just, we'll seems get to like the this, ants. Believe me, we'll get to
just
the
like
ants.
Things just happened, and there was no like purpose or logic to why things were happening. It was just like, oh, and here's another thing, And here's another thing. And it's just like, when you're watching that, that just completely takes away all the stakes and all the like reason to be invested in what's going on for me. Which obviously the MCU is full of like fantastical and unbelievable things. It's not that things aren't believable. It's just when random things pop up with no explanation, it's just like, well, okay, then literally anything can happen.
Right.
Not even within the context of like an established world rules. And so like that was one of the knocks for me. And like, I tried to suspend my disbelief, but, and it was fine for the most part of it. Like Darren happening to be there and being MODOK, which we can talk about him more later. Like that was fine with me. A lot of stuff like that was fine, but when it got to the end, it was just like, it was just too much. And I think it took away from Kang too, because it required a lot of that random stuff just happening in order for them to like take him down. And I think it was a huge missed opportunity to have him be defeated in this, in the way, especially in the way that he was.
Because, totally agree.
Because like, if he's gonna be the villain, and you might say, oh, maybe a different version of him, or like, he's not dead, it's just like, he's probably not dead, we're probably gonna see the same one, or if not, we'll see another version of him. But it doesn't, like, even if that's true, it doesn't build him as a, like, the next level guy. Like Thanos, we didn't see him do a whole lot right before Infinity War. And it might not be fair to compare him to Thanos, but that's who they're setting him up to be, so it's the only comparison we can make, right?
Yeah, the comparisons to Thanos are going to be inevitable, no pun intended, for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years mm-hmm. until the multiverse saga wraps up.
Yeah.
Because obviously Thanos was the driving force behind the Infinity Saga, even though he made only cameo appearances up until, you know, Infinity War. It seems like they're taking a little bit different tact with Kang, where they're like introducing him right away. And obviously he's not sort of like a looming background threat type of character. Obviously with infinite variants and, you know, the multiverse, you know, being opened in, the show Loki, to like literally infinite possibilities. He's the type of character that really should be showing up all over the place. Like popping up like bacteria, or you know, something that just keeps multiplying and like is basically impossible to stamp out, because you know, he's like a Hydra or something like that. They're playing whack-a-mole with Kang. I'm throwing out tons of different analogies, but you get what the point that I'm making is, like, he should always be a threat, or at least some version of him should be a threat. And I couldn't agree with you more. That my biggest problem with the movie, to be honest, is the choice that they made at the end to have Kang be defeated. And I know my theory is that he's not, this version is not dead, the Conqueror version is not dead, because he got basically sucked into this like energy core that like powered his ship, which Scott and Hope were in earlier in like the probability field when it was a larger version. So I'm not believing that this version is dead, because I think it'd actually be a really interesting like recovery story for that version of the character to have to go and deal with those, not only other infinite versions of himself that, you know, I think he implied that those other versions of himself locked him out of time and like exiled him to the quantum realm in the first place, but also to deal with the infinite possibilities of his own self in the probability field and overcome that. I mean, Scott was able to do that earlier in the movie and have all the different possibilities of himself work together because they all aligned on the same goal of, you know, saving his daughter. But does Kang have that sort of motivation inside of him where he can harness infinite possibilities or probabilities of himself and escape his, you know, quantum prison? I think that'd be really interesting to find out. But for him to like be defeated in his first appearance, I mean, we saw him be so strong early in the movie. He was basically Darth Vader with his suit. Like, he was force choking Scott and Cassie without even basically even lifting a finger. Like, I think he literally did lift a finger, and that was like so effortless for him. He was laser beaming, you know, these rebel insurgents into like quantum dust without a second thought. And it turns out his weakness is just like a lot of ants. Like, are you kidding me? He has centuries in the future tech that is essentially magic. And you know, even the tech that exists in present day MCU is basically magic. But like, they were saying about how crazy his stuff is, that like, we've never seen anything like this, and it's like untouchable tech. And then he just gets overpowered by like a lot of ants that happen to live a long time because of quantum realm time shenanigans. I mean, the reality is, for the quantum realm, like, they say time is wonky in there, and I kind of hate that they do that. I mean, it makes sense if it exists outside of our concept of space and time, but it is a huge writer's crutch to just be able to have entire adventures take place in the quantum realm, and you're like, oh, well, this time, no time in the real world passed, and that's what happened here. Like, the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie could have been like 1 hour apart, or you know, 5 seconds apart, because it all took place in the quantum realm, which is really convenient for the main characters that they didn't come back to another 5 year time jump, or like a century had gone by and everybody they know is dead. Like, that would have been insane for the ending of the movie.
Because it was the exact opposite in Endgame, when Scott comes out, he was down for 5 minutes and comes out and it was 5 years.
Well,
and
now it was 5 hours. There, he said 5 hours.
Okay, 5 hours. But it's then it, you know, stretched the time, and that was the opposite.
Right, like, exactly. So it's just like, it really, the amount of time that they spend on the quantum realm relative to the real world is like just however amount of time is convenient for the story, which, like, again, I don't necessarily have a problem with, because, you know, the quantum realm exists out of the space-time continuum, but it is just such a huge, like, plot convenience every single time. So that was a big problem for me, is that Kang lost in the end, due to these, like, super intelligent ants that had created, like, a socialist society after aging thousands of years during the travel down to the quantum realm.
They couldn't resist the, I know socialism is a loaded term, but we could really learn something. I'm like, bro.
That was so unnecessary.
There were a couple moments, a couple lines that were just so heavy-handed on the, like, politics that I'm just like, what is this? Like, this one, and there was the other line that Cassie said that's like, just because it doesn't affect you doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't affect somebody else or something like that. And I'm just like, I mean, I get it. Like, you don't have to avoid it entirely, but it's just like, it's like they took clips from like a political speech or a political like ad and just stuck them in completely out of context. And it's just like, it doesn't make any sense that these characters would say things like this.
One thing about the politics aspect is, like, I have no problem with the MCU getting political. Like, Civil War and Black Panther are two of the best MCU movies out there, and they are both very heavy-handed with the politics that plays a major role in their story, and it makes total sense. But this movie has, like, zero political leaning. Like, the story has nothing to do with politics at all. It has to do with stopping a time-traveling megalomaniac from getting out and destroying multiverses, and it just was bothering me. And like you said, those couple lines, I think there may have been one or two more, but they're not coming to mind. It's like, it totally takes me out of it, because Disney, you know, Marvel obviously is part of Disney, but Disney as a whole has a tendency to like throw in a couple lines like this to kind of show that they're, you know, up to date with the political times. But it's just such obvious pandering that, like, these lines, and, you know, they always make a big deal also about, you know, super progressive moments in their movies, but also those moments are super short and easily editable out for, like, the Chinese release or, like, Middle Eastern releases. And I'm like, it's such pandering on both sides of it, of the coin there, because, yeah, you're throwing in these scenes that really only mean anything to like the American political sphere, or, you know, America, Canada, Europe, you know, all these political spheres that care about this stuff. So you're just like throwing in this moment to appease them, to show that, hey, you're on their side, but also you're making it such a small snippet of a moment that you can take it out for countries that disagree with that, whatever you're saying, or like, it's just so annoying. And the fact that some people just like eat it up and give like Disney flowers for every time they do something like that, or like love these characters that are super politically motivated even when it doesn't make any sense in the story. It's like, it's so frustrating sometimes. It didn't like take me fully out of the movie, but it like, it just irked me for a few moments. I was like,
yeah, it's really not like that big a deal, honestly, at the end of the day. It's because they do make it such small moments. But are you trying to tell me that hyper-capitalistic Disney, who like constantly is buying up and shutting down competitors, is like is somehow for, you know, something like socialism, or you know?
No, of course
I'm not. I'm sure they're lobbying the government for higher corporate taxes, like, yeah. That's sort of definitely what Disney's
Disney should absolutely just, you know, spread its billions of earnings every year just among the Florida residents, for just because. That's not happening. But there's a couple moments like that, and Cassie's like whole character, I'll talk about her in a sec, but I want to wrap up what we kind of got off topic about Kang being defeated at the end. I do think that this version of Kang that we saw could be a huge threat. And obviously, the bigger threat revealed in the end credit scene is like the Council of Kangs, where there's, again, infinite versions of him all throughout different timelines that, you know, have converged because they experience time differently. And like, I really want to see more from this character, and obviously we're going to. But to have him be defeated by just a lot of ants and like the ant family, like the Ant-Man and Wasp family, is not a great start. I think that it would have been a much more interesting and threatening introduction to the character to have, if you want to have the heroes, you know, quote unquote, win at the end, fine. But multiple people should have died. And it should have been by like a skin of their teeth type victory where, you know, the win is like escaping with whoever is still alive. Yeah. Like that, it should have been, Kang should have absolutely handed these people's butts to him, like on a plate, like with zero effort.
Yeah. I don't necessarily have a problem with him getting defeated necessarily, like as a concept. Like I understand that it's hard, like Infinity War was an exception, right? I think there should be more scenarios in the MCU as a whole where the villain just straight up wins a movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
To add some stakes, but I don't necessarily have a problem with him getting defeated necessarily. It's more in how it was done, right? It's not as if they outsmarted him. It's like, oh, we can't defeat him, but we can outsmart him. We can escape quickly and leave him trapped here still. We can sabotage his machine, right? Sabotage his device again. Like if it turned into a heist, right? Where they then have to steal the core back, and then they escape back to the real world with it, and they say, okay, we know it's only a matter of time until he gets out, but at the very least, we corrected our mistake, we left him stuck down there, we escaped, right? Something like that, still leaving the threat of him out there, but still technically having a win for the end of the day. Like, something like that I would have had absolutely no problem with, right? I don't have a problem with him. I was smart, like, even though he's still, like, the smartest person to ever exist, at least up till now in the MCU, or as far as we've been told, pretty much, because he's from the future, has all this technology and everything.
Right. They can be clever and like outwit him without being like having an higher IQ than him. Absolutely.
Yeah. You can say, you know, he's super overconfident, which he clearly is, right? Because he has all this tech and he knows all of time, right? Stuff like this. He's super overconfident, easy to trick because of that. Sure. Right. Something like that, again, would have been all on board. No problem with it. For me, the issues was that it was just how it was done. There were a couple things that led to it being done. The first thing that happened was he does the classic, just leave the person with shrinking powers due to her magic suit with her suit with two guards all by themselves. And then obviously Cassie escapes and is like, oh, how did that happen? And then she frees the... I don't even know if they give her a name, the rebel leader.
Yeah, they do, but I don't remember what it is.
Yeah.
It's not important.
You know, punchy lady number one. And then they just like, they do the thing that almost reminded me of what they did with Hux, General Hux in the Star Wars sequels, right? Where he's set up to be this kind of intimidating guy. And then they just completely make him the butt of the joke, and it just kills any seriousness that he has, right? When Kang is giving his, he decides somehow to give his, like, big glowy speech, like hologram speech, which seems out of character, doesn't really make sense, is just a way for him to delay until the heroes can stop him, but whatever. And then they just, like, hack it off screen, and then he just, they're, like, dumbfounded. Like, that's the type of thing that just completely undercuts, like, the threat of a villain. And then, you know, magically, just like in The Rise of Skywalker, all of the random people just show up. They're like, now is the time to fight. What gave you that impression? He's stronger than ever. Just because one person escaped his prison, he's literally has his machine back. He's stronger than he's ever been. Why do they think that now is the time after all this time?
And not only that, but like Cassie gives this, you know, supposed to be a rousing, inspirational speech. But they, like, none of these rebels, like, know who she is, aside literally from, like, the handful that captured her in the beginning.
Yeah.
And
none of them know
not
who
only
she
that,
is.
Her speech was, like, incredibly cringe. I was like, this cannot be inspiring anybody right now.
No. But then they show up. It's, like, it's supposed to be this, like, it almost, to me, reminded me of the moment at the end of Love and Thunder when Thor gives the lightning powers to all the kids. And it's supposed to be this, like, yeah, like, rise up, we got this moment. And I'm just sitting there with my hand in my, like, my head in my hands, just like, oh gosh. And then so they go fight all of these way less technologically advanced people that apparently have been easily crushed for decades, magically just like defeat his army out of nowhere, which is like, why, what, that doesn't make any sense. And then the ants was just the thing that sent it over the edge for me, was just they magically showed up, magically had powers, and then didn't even use those powers or technology. They just went and bit him, and then that was it. And so it's like the heroes didn't earn it really in any way. It was these rebels showing up and these ants showing up that basically did everything for them. Like, obviously Ant-Man got big, which, why was he like tired and slow? Just because he was big? He still is like smaller than an atom, so relative to his normal size, he shouldn't be big at all. Didn't make sense, but whatever, it's relative. So he like is fighting, and it was pretty cool when he was big and, you know, knocking over buildings. I thought that was really fun.
Of course, everybody loves to see giant man, even if he's micro, like quantum sized giant man.
Yeah, exactly. He's still like way smaller than he should be, but just like the fact that that happened, and then Kang just didn't use his power, it's just like all that together. And then Kang gets sucked into his core, which has never been established to like suck anything in. The only reason it changed size was because of the Pym particles, and they didn't like use Pym particles on it or anything. It just magically, he gets sucked into it, which was never set up as being possible or anything. But all of that to be said, it's just like, it's almost like the Gore the God Butcher problem, where we hear a lot of the awesome and really cool things that he did. Like, he mentions casually that he's like killed Thor and the Avengers like hundreds of times over before. We see a little bit of flashbacks when Janet like touches his ship about a third of the way through the movie, right? We like hear a lot of how he's amazing. He's constantly saying like, time means nothing to me, like I have all this technology, stuff like that. But like we don't see really any of that. The whole character of Kang is carried through Jonathan Majors' confidence and his performance, and a few moments where he just shows awesome power by, you know, flicking a finger and crushing Ant-Man and stuff like that, right? But the longer lasting impression is him just getting bit by ants and magically getting sucked into a hole that, like, obviously he's not dead. He didn't die on screen. It's the MCU. Obviously he's not dead, right? But getting defeated that way, it's just like out of nowhere, didn't make sense. He just stopped using all of his abilities, and it just like to see that was just like, how is this the guy that was claiming, especially since we didn't see it, like if we had flashbacks of him like holding up Thor's head or something, like that would have been way more, got me way more invested in buying in, right? Something like that.
Oh yeah.
But we just hear him talk about it, and then he gets defeated. It's like he gets defeated easily. It's like, okay, what happens when they do call in Thor, who's like way stronger than all of the people there combined? What is he supposed to do? Like, you know, that was just for me more what what was disappointing. I think, my biggest negative of the movie. I think everything else, for the most part, was good. I didn't really like Cassie's character. I don't think I disliked her as much as you. I thought she was annoying, but whatever. A lot of the new, younger teenage characters they've introduced have been annoying to me. I think it's just because I'm getting old and cranky. But you, that was the part
cadre
that
was old
the
man.
Biggest letdown. And that was why the end to me kind of fell apart. Because the setup of Kang was so cool. There was so much opportunity for him to do really cool things. I liked MODOK for the most part. Obviously, his CGI was abysmal, and we can talk about that now. CGI, the worst I've ever seen. Like, it made She-Hulk look amazing.
Okay, so here's my thoughts on MODOK, because I'm sure I'm not the only one to make this connection, but every time he was on screen and had, like, the metal face shield up, all I could think about was Mr. Electric from Sharkboy and Lava Girl. George Lopez's character in, like, the dream world.
Yep.
That is exactly what came to mind.
And that came out, like, 20 years ago and looked better.
Yes. So. On the other hand, the more I've thought about it, like, MODOK is such a goofy character. Not, like, he does not, like, quippy and, you know, makes jokes all the time, but, like, he's just he's a giant head piloting, like, a mech suit. He's inherently a stupid, goofy character. And there's actually a show out on Hulu about MODOK with Patton Oswalt voicing. If y'all haven't checked it out, it came out like last year or maybe even the year before. It's been a while. But that was actually like a really enjoyable show. That and Hitmonkey have been like two of the most entertaining shows that I've seen. And they're not exactly MCU, but they are Marvel like properties on Hulu. You guys should check those out. But like 90% of the MODOK show is just like him getting ripped and, you know, pooped on essentially. And he's supposed to be kind of like a pathetic character. And the more I think about MODOK in the movie, the more I like it. Although the CG like does totally throw me off. But like that's also how MODOK looks in the comics. Like obviously it's a drawing instead of computer generated visuals, but it's a giant head pilot in like a mech suit. Like he's so stupid looking. And
yeah. Oh, I had no problem with him being in there. I thought he was funny.
I mean, I think that might be one of the most like comic accurate depictions we've seen from Marvel in a long time, despite how, you know, bad it looked on the surface. Like that's what that character is. And I kind of liked the end part where he, you know, the redemption arc was, I think, really stupid.
Terrible. Yeah, terrible.
But I also kind of think it fits because, like, nobody really bought it. And, I mean, the whole, like, don't be a dick thing was kind of stupid also. But, like, when he was dying,
that was really stupid.
And Scott was like, are you okay? And he's like, vomits up blood. And he's like, yeah, probably not. And I did laugh out loud at that part. That was quite funny.
Yeah, his death scene was great. Yeah. At least I died in Avenger. What?
Yeah, everybody sure. was like, what? Yeah.
I always considered you a brother. What? Like, I haven't seen you in like 5 years. And also, I killed you. And I'd only met you like 3 days before that. Like, what?
Yeah, but no. MODOK, I think, the more I think about it, the more I liked it.
Oh, he was great outside of his CGI. Yeah. No, I think he was
But even like the CGI being bad, I think that just contributes to the goofiness and like sort of charm of the character where it's just like he's so pathetic and but he thinks he's like this top notch. He's like, I'm the ultimate weapon. Says that several times throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. And he thinks he's like, you know, hot stuff. But like Kang humbles him really quick when he is interrogating Scott. And, you know, again, like, MODOK is just supposed to be, like, this pathetic loser of a character. And I think the CGI just being so, like, I don't want to say deliberately bad, because I know Marvel's had their issues with VFX artists being overworked, and that's led to a decline in visual quality over, you know, the last few entries. But, man, I think it just fits the character perfectly. I mean, the more I think about it, MODOK is one of my favorite parts of the movie.
I don't know. I it seems like they were trying with the CGI. Like, if they had intentionally made it bad, sure. But it seemed like they were trying to have it be good, and it just looked off. But again, I think him as a whole was hilarious. I thought he was a lot of fun. It was cool seeing him back, at least like there and back, and his interactions with Ant-Man were always funny. Didn't like the don't be a dick part.
That was although dumb. Especially since it was Cassie that said it. I was like,
had nothing, had so no knowledge annoying. Of him or anything. Yeah.
All right, yeah, let me
all right, lay it on Cassie for a sec.
Cassie was the most annoying character I've seen in any MCU entry ever. Like, she is right up there with Ollie from Game of Thrones as like my least favorite child characters in like anything. She starts off the movie in jail because she was like, oh, hey, Dad, thanks for picking me up. What was I supposed to do? Just let those cops, arrest those peaceful protesters? Like, they don't even know. Nobody knows what they're protesting. It's probably something related to the blip, but.
Like, yeah, they did say that it was homeless people that had been because of the blip.
I stand corrected. Yeah. You're right. Then there's that whole scene at dinner where she like rips her dad for like not doing a whole lot after saving the world. And he's like, I'm sorry, did I mention that I saved the world? And they're like, oh, yeah, you say that all the time. You should write a book about it. Ha ha. And it's like, okay, yeah, it's funny to like rag on him, but he like did save the world. So
more than the world, too.
Yeah.
I mean, literally half of existence.
The galaxy. Yeah. And she's like, yeah, and now what do you do? Like, you sign books. And I'm like, dude, like, how about show some respect for your father who literally saved the world? And thankfully, there's, like, not a ton else to do in terms of supervillains at this point, you know, in, like, San Francisco, as far as he's aware. And then there's that whole scene where it turns out that she and Hank and Hope were working on, like, this quantum communicator. Turns out she just read Hank's journals and became an expert in quantum mechanics like super quickly as a 15-year-old. And then Hank has that line where he's like, yeah, your daughter built a quantum Hubble telescope in the basement by herself. And I'm like, okay, well, first of all, not every kid needs to be like a super genius. Okay. We got, we already had Shuri. We got Riri Williams in Wakanda Forever. Like, Cassie can like just be a kid that like ends up with her dad's suit and powers eventually. Like, she doesn't need to be a super genius type character just from reading her, you know, adopted grandpa's journals. It's not even her real grandpa. That's the thing. It's like, Scott and Hope aren't even married, as far as we know. Like,
no, they're not.
They're just a couple.
They would have mentioned it.
And he's like splitting custody with his wife and her new husband, who they're not even in the movie. And also, totally unrelated tangent, but like Luis and the other wombats aren't in the movie, which I think is a huge missed opportunity, especially given the like narration at the beginning and end. Luis should have been there for that. But Cassie like totally goes behind her dad's back and like does all this secret science stuff with Hank, who again, not her relative. Like, they are technically nothing to each other. She's like, what, his daughter's boyfriend's kid? Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's not even like they got to know each other over the blip either, because he was blinked, right? So she was there with none of them there.
She was just reading only his journals over the last, and like, decided to make some crazy quantum communicator.
Where did she even get his journals? Is the question.
Literally, who knows? She just found them because he just leaves that information laying about, apparently nowadays. But yeah, then he like has apparently hooked her up with a suit, which, again, in prior iterations of Hank Pym, like, he's very protective, again, rightfully so, of Pym particles because they're super dangerous and if in the wrong hands could cause like irreversible catastrophic damage. And then he's just like, JK, LOL, here's a bunch of them for like a 15-year-old who clearly does not have a handle on her life because she keeps ending up in jail. That goes into the next scene, which is not necessarily Cassie's fault, but this is one of the gripes that I had about Janet's character. Immediately before that scene at dinner, when the five of them are sitting around the table, Hope asks Janet, she's like, hey, Mom, why don't you ever talk to us about like the quantum realm? And Janet's like, don't ever ask me about that. Like, I don't ever want to talk about the quantum realm. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. Like, you were down there for 30 years. Don't think that you would really want to, you know, relive that if you were in prison for 30 years, essentially. Okay, fair enough. But then she it's revealed to Scott and Janet that the other three have been working on this quantum communicator thing. And then she immediately, like, flips out and she's like, why didn't you talk to, you should have talked to me about this. Why didn't you ask me about it? I had been down there before. And I'm like, dude, you literally not one scene ago said, I don't ever want to talk about the quantum realm. Like, what kind of logic is that? Like, I guess she's the only one with experience, but there, you've consistently said that that's not something you have ever discussed, despite these people asking about it. So why are you getting all indignant when they, you know, move forward without you? Like, it makes zero sense. That was just a scene with Janet that bothered me, but she then, like, continues to not answer their questions about the quantum realm and Kang once they get trapped down there. She's like, oh, there's no time. We have to stay safe and, like, keep moving. And I'm like, but you're walking all this time. And at this point, I'm just rambling, but I'm letting it all out here. They are just, like, traveling, and there's so much time that she could have explained to them what's going on. But for dramatic reveal purposes, she just chooses not to. Okay.
I mean, enough there's about some
Janet.
Things that I
that was the part that bothered me about Janet early in the movie. But for the rest of the movie, she's, like, one of the best
pretty
characters.
Fun. I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem with, like, characters making bad decisions, right? Because that has to happen, right? But when, like, I don't necessarily have a problem with her not telling them initially, right? Because she doesn't think they're ever going to, well, actually, no. Because she, like, doesn't think they're ever going to go back there. But, like, at the end of Ant-Man 2, we see them literally going, she's with them working to go back into the quantum realm. And so it's like, what?
And she's like, in that scene, she's like, by the way, don't get sucked into a time vortex, which obviously is a huge lead-in for Endgame. Yeah, because they use time travel there. But then, like, clearly she knows about what's going on down there and is fine with doing quantum research because they're sending Scott there. So, like,
I mean,
why
it's
not
obvious
tell
that
him
they,
what he made encounter?
I mean, it's obvious that they did not come up with the plot for Quantumania until well after Endgame, right? Like, it's obvious that they didn't have any plans for there being, like, a civilization down there or anything like that. And they just, you know, made it for this. Like, they can't plan out everything, but... But still, like, there's a cleaner way to work it in, I think. And on the Cassie thing, this stuck in my head, right? You were saying it really did bother me how they were, like, belittling Scott the whole time, right? Like, he's the main character, and I just don't like when shows or movies just take the main character and just beat them down for no reason. Like, it happened in Loki all the time. Like, he was constantly getting punched by people smaller than him, kicked over, made to just look super weak just for a laugh. And it's like, that's not, like, they're superheroes. They're supposed to be people that we, like, look up to, that inspire, that, like, sure, you can start weak, like Captain America, right? In the for his first movie, he's getting beat up all the time, and then he grows to, like, overcome that because it's part of his character arc. It's not just, like, for a cheap laugh. Like, Ant-Man saving the universe and then deciding that, hey, like, it's been too stressful. I'm constantly worried about my family's safety. Like, I just want to be a dad and be present in my daughter's life because she hasn't had me for the last 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a totally noble thing to do. Like, them saying, what do you do now? Sign books is like talking to, like, a World War II veteran and saying, like, oh, what do you do now? Just sit around? Why are you not, like,
right?
Like, you just,
exactly.
you just
good
saved
analogy.
The world. What are you
good
doing?
Analogy.
Why are you not out there fighting even more? Like, why are you not immediately jumping into Vietnam? It's like, it's like, are you, what?
Like, do you even hear the words that are coming
out of
your mouth?
How you have to be to think that that's, like, a logical, like, claim to make against somebody? That was so absurd when I heard that. I was like, bro, how dare your dad want to spend time with you? Like, you know, right? how many kids in the world would kill to have their, like, dad present and healthy in their lives? Like, it's crazy. And yeah, Cassie, dude, was not it.
She annoyed me even more later when they, you know, get taken in by the quantum, like, rebels or whatever we're going to call them. And Scott's like, our only objective here is, like, to find the rest of the family and get out of here. And she's like, but dad, we have to, like, help these people. And then she has that line where she's like, just because it's not happening to you doesn't mean it's not important, or like it doesn't affect, you know, other people. And I'm like, dude, like, I get the sentiment you're going for, but like, you literally have no clue what's going on down here. And Scott even says that. He's like, we don't know what's happening, like who these people are. Like, they could be the bad guys for all we know. Like, we just don't know any information. And she's like, yeah, but they're getting hurt. And I'm like, listen, listen here, you little, listen here, kid.
Yeah.
Like, this is not your fight. Up until, like, obviously when Kang takes Cassie prisoner, like, it does become their fight. It's like, if forces Ant-Man and the Wasp's hand at that point. But like, up until that point, it's like, dude, we literally have no clue what's going on down here. We just realized that there are like whole civilizations in the quantum realm, and now you want to just get involved because you feel bad for the first people that we came into contact with.
Yeah,
like, get a grip, kid.
Yeah,
for real.
Makes no sense. And this was it gave me real Horton Hears a Who vibes.
Yes.
Where it's like, a person's a person no matter how small. It's like, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem with that line of reasoning.
Right.
But also,
no,
it's Scott is portrayed as the bad guy for, like, again, wanting to keep his daughter safe when she clearly has no idea what she's getting into.
Yeah.
And it's like, daughter, you got to understand that. And that was something that I think, that was something that made me really appreciate. Oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking on her name. I sound like an idiot.
Hope.
What the heck was the girl's name in Hawkeye? Kate Bishop.
Yeah.
I don't know why I just blanked on that. Kate Bishop, like, you know.
Kate Bishop.
Was saying, you know, a few times, because it's a similar situation, right? Where she was clearly like a daughter figure to Hawkeye. She was like under him, similar powers, you know, type of deal.
Well, and, similar lack of powers, but yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, similar deal. And she like had some things like, hey, you got to increase your branding, like poked fun at him and stuff like that, but also like was genuinely learning from him. And
yes,
you know, Scott tries to teach her, like he teaches her like how to throw a punch, and like he's like, you grow small, get big, right? And that was something that was set up and paid off in this movie, right? That was good. But like, I think there should have been more of her like wanting to learn to be a better superhero,
right? And, like, she's such an entitled kid. She thinks it has it all together. Even in that scene where she's like, Scott's they're the rebels are being attacked and they have to like fight their way out, she like is such a know-it-all. He's like, you have to like go small and like big and like follow through, and he like demonstrates. He's like, punches out three guys, he's like, see what I did? And she's like, yeah, Dad, I know how to do it. Gosh, I know she's just being like a teenager, but it's like, oh, you're so annoying. Let your dad teach you. Like, he's being a good dad for the first time in his entire life. And, like, he has been doing this for years at this point as Ant-Man. He's an expert. Like, let him teach you, especially if you're trying to step into the same light as, like, a superhero with a suit and, like, doing good for people. Like, he knows the ropes. Like, let him guide you. And it does pay off at the end, but, like, she is, like, just so unwilling to like take advice because she doesn't respect your dad.
Well, that's where I don't have a problem again with there being characters that start off like that, right? But there, if you want us to root for them, there has to be some sort of arc and recognition of that and growth in it, right? Like, everyone obviously can't start off awesome and amazing and funny and charismatic and everything, because then it's boring, right? Then everyone has like the same personality, the same story, you know, there's nothing to it. But it's more about like acknowledging that at some point during the movie, some recognition of like, thank you for putting your like life on the line for me, Dad, like let me learn a little bit, something like that. And there was absolutely none of that. So I mean, I know that she's going to probably be in some like Young Avengers thing that they do that's going to have Kate Bishop and Ironheart and maybe Ms. Marvel, unless she's off with the Marvels doing things. Like, I know people were speculating that like Wanda's kids are somehow going to get back in this universe because they, you know, their powers were teased, you know, some type of Young Avengers thing. And I'm just like, I'm looking forward to Kate Bishop in that. And up till now, from what else we've seen, not a whole lot else. I don't know. Maybe it's just me being old and cranky, but all the teenagers, I'm just like, I liked when the heroes were all like more mature. Like, obviously Tony Stark was never very mature, like outwardly at least. But he was still making sacrificial decisions and everything like that. And right. It just is like a lot of the teenagers seem like they're being written for teenagers, which is fine because they're teenagers. But when it comes to my enjoyment of them, it's just like, yeah.
Right. And Tony's a great example there. Because like in the beginning of Iron Man, and obviously it continues later, but mainly in the beginning of Iron Man 1, he's like a total dick and has a very humbling experience. It doesn't completely bring him back to earth. Obviously, he still has a lot of growth to go through for the rest of the movies that he's in. But he clearly goes through a lot in that first movie and comes out a totally changed and different person. And I know this is going to be a longer setup because she's not like the star of this movie and, you know, will be set up for like Young Avengers later down the line. But I do want to see more from Cassie as she like evolves into a character more like her dad, or fills a role like her dad, but is her own character, but also is significantly less like obnoxious and self-absorbed and like know-it-all type character. So, yeah, I don't want to keep ranting about her, but man, I really did not like her character in this movie at all. Although I did really like the moment at the end where they were both like big and they hugged it out. That was a sweet moment.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think some of her dynamic with him was good, like in the middle. Again, I think the middle was just by far and away the part that I enjoyed the most. Like, I really loved the tension because I feel like I've been a lot negative, which I think I just enjoy talking more critically than not, just on the whole. But I loved, like, the setup in the middle where they get separated and one side ends up finding out what's going on through Janet, and one, you know, Cassie and Scott don't know what's going on. And then Scott has to decide, you know, between Cassie and an entire timeline, which, like, it's hard to even comprehend when they say like trillions of people will die. It's like you can't even really comprehend that. So it
right, and that's a like bit how many, like, you know, maybe, you know, a couple hundred of those people.
Yeah,
like, trillions like, is not a fathomable number compared to the one person that you're like closest to. Yeah,
exactly. So like, especially because it's a different timeline. Like, it's technically doesn't even exist in terms of your universe, right? But like, I like that tension where he has to decide and they're going to steal the thing. The whole probability field thing was really funny. I loved when, like, the Baskin-Robbins version of him showed up and was
probability field was, like, my favorite scene of the movie.
Yeah.
Aside from when Kang was on screen. That was, like, the most visually entertaining, like, thought-provoking scene in the whole movie. And was also
emotional, too.
Yeah,
it was emotional, too, when like, he's, like,
every beat.
When they all are of the same mind as, like, Cassie is all that matters, right? It's, like, yeah, that's like kind of what his whole story is about, this whole movie. And so, like, that part was really good. Like, I thought there was going to be a bit more conflict between, like, the Wasp and that crew and Ant-Man, where they're, like, trying to stop him because they know what's going on. And he's just like, you know, he's like, no, you don't understand. They have Cassie type of thing. So I thought the tension there was really good. Again, Kang in the middle of the movie was just rock solid. And until the end, he was just amazing because he didn't even, like, he seemed so much like a reasonable guy, like, in a lot of parts, but you could just tell there was something off with him, right? And that just gave him such a menacing, like, a menacing air about him. I don't really know exactly how to say it, but, like, he was phenomenal for the whole middle. And again, we talked about all our issues with how it ended, with his story, but I thought for the most part he was great, and I can't wait to see him back, even though, you know, the stakes with regards to him are kind of undercut. So the middle was really, really, really good. And again, it's MCU, so there were a couple classic random jokes that took you way out of the movie.
Yeah, random Bill Murray cameo. He was there for like 2 seconds just being himself, which that kind of took me out of the movie.
But well, yeah, especially when he took his glasses off or his helmet off or whatever, and it just lingered on his face for like 2 seconds. It's like, please laugh. It's like in when they hold up like, please laugh signs in like a live audience. It's like,
yeah,
okay.
Well, to me, okay. It's getting more and more into like the, you know, when you would watch like Disney Channel movies or like special episodes of Disney Channel shows, and there would be like a guest star, and then they would show up, and then, you know, the main character like bump into, I don't know, like Ryan Seacrest or somebody, and they'd be like, oh, hey, didn't see you there. And they would turn around, and then, you know, the crowd would go crazy for like 2 full seconds while they like recognized somebody you know, famous. Like, that's what it seems like that cameo was for, is like, oh, it's much. Bill Murray. Yay. Yeah. Okay.
It's like when they have laugh tracks and stuff, when they have to stop the conversation awkwardly for the everyone to clap and laugh, and they continue it. It's like, that's not a normal, like, you know,
exactly
thing that happens.
And I will say, there were kind of moments like that in Spider-Man No Way Home also, which, you know, most obviously happen when, you know, Toby and Andrew, like, come out of the portals. Like, there's a little bit of awkward timing there where there's clearly room for, like, audience applause in a theater setting. That is fine because it was done well, and I like that. So I'm being a little bit hypocritical because I'm picking and choosing what I like. But,
well, also there because Ned and MJ would have been awkwardly standing there because they wouldn't have known who the heck it was. So it kind of fits a little bit more there.
Right. That is a good point. But yeah, like, for also totally unrelated note, if you guys have not watched videos of, you know, popular sitcoms without the laugh tracks, they're hysterical. It's unbelievably funny.
It's just some psycho stuff,
listen to these
dude.
Jokes, and then the main characters just sit and wait for like 4 seconds after every single line in dead silence. Oh, it's so good. Y'all gotta check it
makes
out.
Them the all
Big
seem
Bang
crazy.
Theory ones are my favorite because Big Bang Theory has one of the worst laugh tracks in all of TV history, and watching the show without it is just like so unnatural. It's amazing.
I love the ones with Ross from Friends because he just looks like an actual insane person.
Well, Ross is an actual insane person.
That's true.
But we're getting off the ball here. back to your comments about the middle section of this movie. There, the entire time, with like leading up to and during and then right after the sequence with Bill Murray, and even scenes with the Rebels to a certain extent, gave me huge Star Wars vibes. Like, the cantina that they were in was literally Mos Eisley. They had these weird, like, alien drinks, all these fantastical looking creatures that were speaking a different language until they drank the ooze. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. If you're going to establish the quantum realm as this, like, basically space area, but like really small, I think that's totally fine. But it seemed a little bit more than an homage. Like, it was basically ripping off Mos Eisley Cantina to my eyes. But I am glad that Bill Murray's character, like, didn't stick around super long. He was just being himself, and I don't mind him, you know, making an appearance for a few seconds. Didn't really need to know that he and Janet, like, banged a lot back in the day. Totally unnecessary. It was for one joke, but it was, like, it went on way too long. Didn't need to know that or care at all.
That was one of those MCU jokes that I had just referenced that, like, is clearly there just to be a joke and completely takes you out of the movie, where it's like, okay. Like, it's not as natural. Like, it seemed like a lot of the quips and humor in earlier MCU stuff, maybe this is just rose-tinted glasses or whatever, but was, like, natural. Like, I remember in the first Avengers, it, like, made sense, right? Like, Captain America was a man at a time. He didn't understand any of the references of modern day.
Yeah.
Right? Thor was not from Earth. He didn't understand any of the references, right? Like, the flying monkeys, right? And Thor's like, I don't understand. And Captain's like, I do. I understand that reference, right? Which is a reference that I use all the time. But, like, that was funny because it made sense for the characters. It was, like, in line with them. It wasn't just, all right, well, here it's been 2 minutes without a joke.
Yeah.
Whoever is talking now just has to say something funny, even if they're not, like, a comedic person, even if, like, it is a total sidebar from whatever conversation's going on. It's just, like,
yeah, that's a great example, actually. You're totally right. Like, I don't want to say the comedy is, like, forced at this point, because every movie has... I mean, but every movie has had, like, its fair share of, you know, jokes that didn't land for me. And so I think it's more of just, like, is it funny or is it not? And that scene that you're talking about works perfectly because, you know, Thor is, like, still in his, like, baby man phase of, you know, trying to be an Asgardian ruler and holding himself with super high esteem, but not really understanding a whole lot of what's going on. And Steve, you know, the man at a time, is desperately trying to, like, connect to those around him and is, like, totally lost with, like, the only reason he's on board is basically because he's like a soldier and he, you know, is joining the good fight, but he has no clue what's going on with, like, anything in pop culture or, like, any of these other people that he's with. Like, he's a total misfit. And for there to finally be something that he understands that, you know, this Asgardian god doesn't, he's like, aha, I have to seize the moment and, like, make sure everybody knows that I'm up to date and, like, I'm hip with this reference. And it, like, it was funny in the moment because it's obviously it's a humorous line, but it also fits the characters perfectly. And more recently, like, you've just had, again, like you said, a lot of characters be like, oh, it's been 2 minutes without a one liner. We gotta throw something in there. Otherwise people are going to think we're too serious and we're going to be like DC now with all this lack of humor. Yeah. But
yeah, it's just tough. It just seems like a lot of characters are just all becoming the same personality. Right, just all the quippy, jokey, and like a lot of the humor in early MCU was because it was people that were so different clashing, like personality wise, right? Like later in Avengers Age of Ultron, when Cap is like language, right? It's like, because that makes sense, because Tony's like a flyboy, you know, jackass, and Captain America is like the good, he's like a Christian, boy, like church boy.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, like that stuff is way funnier when it's in that way, as opposed to, which I thought this movie was decently funny, right? But there were some jokes that I'm just like, I think overall the MCU humor is just like, it's just all becoming the same and it's so forced in a lot of situations. But to move on from that, I have a question.
Yes.
I think this is one of the most important revelations of this movie in terms of world building and such. We find out in one of the opening scenes of this movie that Pym particles can be used to make food. So, and I think that this was played for a joke, but I think this has serious ramifications. It's never going to get brought up ever again. But they take a small pizza, like a, you know, a very small pizza, maybe the size of your hand, drop a Pym particle on it, boom, it's like a full-size large pizza that they can all eat with.
You're totally
how
right.
How on earth are they complaining about people being homeless and people not having food when they can literally take toys and snacks and turn them into full-size meals and full-size houses? How do they not just make little houses and boom, now they got a house? How do they not take little crumbs, like a crumb from a piece of bread, and poof, like, if, because it insinuates that it's not just bigger, but it has like increased nutritional value and stuff for them to all eat it, that it's not just like mostly air now.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, how are there any issues with starvation in the world, with water access, with medicine access, like when you can literally just make them all bigger? I'm like, that for me was such a world breaking, like, and it was played for a joke, and it's really not a big deal, but
no, it is like a big deal though, because the scene seriously continues with them being like, yeah, you're not helping anybody, while they are literally using like universal altering technology to like save $5 because like, you can order like a small pizza instead of a large. Yeah
I'm like, bro,
it's unbelievable.
They're talking about like the company, right? Scott is like fawning over how great Hope is because she's like doing all these outreaches and like saving all these people and everything, which is great, awesome, good for her, that's really awesome. It seems like there's a way simpler solution to this, especially when they learn like Thanos's reason was because resources were limited. His reason for doing what he did was because there weren't enough resources, and they have an easy free way of making infinite resources.
Dude, even in Ant-Man and the Wasp, the second one, they have the miniature lab, but in scenes they're like powering everything with giant blown up like Duracell batteries, so they should be able, because, you know, apparently those, if you just enlarge them, are big enough to power this like massive lab. So why is there an energy crisis? Why is there any sort of energy crisis around the planet if you can just make giant Duracell batteries and those are fine? Yeah, the implications of like size changing, and it makes no sense, obviously, right? Like, the Pym particle is another thing, like the quantum realm, where it just works how the writer needs it to, because they say in the first movie that like when he becomes small and you punch somebody, like because you're punching with the force of a, you know, 200-pound person in like a 1-inch body, it's going to hurt a lot more, right? But then he also grows to giant man and he can just punch just as hard. So like any size
way
that he
stronger,
changes,
way harder when he's
yeah,
big.
Yeah, exactly.
He's knocking
so
over
like
buildings and stuff.
Any size that he just changes into is just way better than normal size, apparently.
Yes.
So,
except for when he was like a toddler.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, because then it was funny. School. Right. But imagine if he was just like a beefed up toddler and just was like able to like rock people because he's smaller.
I mean, he would have been by their
logic.
He should
have been. Yeah, he would have been a 200-pound man, like shrunk, densified into a toddler's body.
But and you can always chalk that up to like the suit, right? He's in the suit. It makes
sure,
him stronger either
sure.
way. Sure.
But
when
like,
it comes,
yeah.
when it's the food, that for
yes.
me was a line that was like,
totally.
They
agree.
Cannot complain about any starvation or any problems with access with medicine amounts, food, water, housing. I'm like, you can't complain about
totally,
any of that.
Totally agree. Like even for housing, you don't need to make full size. Like just get a bunch of small houses and then just make a bunch of people small, and then you'd be like, here, you can all live in this tiny community, and it'll take up way less space.
Okay, I don't know about that.
No, that would have to be, that would be terrible because you couldn't give all those people pin particle technology because they would have used it, obviously. And you couldn't
just
shrink
them against build houses. You do mass houses, boom.
Yeah, a hundred percent. 100%. Like that's the food thing for sure. Is just like these people might be homeless, but like you could feed them indefinitely if you just give them giant pizzas all the time. Like,
and you take a crumb from that pizza, you blow it up. You
infinite
eat it. You take
hack.
A crumb from that
literally,
pizza, you blow it up.
Literally,
like,
infinite food hack. Yeah. No, yeah. It the growing and shrinking stuff, it like makes zero sense. It is totally used for convenience, however the writer mm-hmm. wants it to be used. Like, whatever makes a cool scene or a funny scene, go for it. But like, you're totally right. I didn't even think about that until like you started talking about it. But I'm like, you're absolutely right. They could solve world hunger with pimp particles. They could do so much with it.
And they're getting mad at Scott for not doing anything.
Exactly.
I'm like, bro,
you're so right.
That was the part to me that was like, me was the most world shattering thing in the whole movie. And it's again, it's played for a joke. It's never gonna get brought up again. It's like really not a big deal, but for me it was just like
huge implications. No, you're totally right. You're totally right. We've broken the MCU. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But back to the rest of the movie. I mean, I feel like we've covered a whole lot of stuff. The my biggest issue again is like the ending with Kang losing and in the way he lost. Man, I really thought that there was gonna be a scene where like Scott and Hope get trapped in the quantum realm after like he gets sucked into the core and the portal closes. Hope comes back flying back through the portal to like help Scott, and then it gets destroyed and they have no way out. And I'm like, okay, interesting idea that they're gonna now be like trapped there. She like sacrificed her family, going back to her family in the real world. Turns out nope, Cassie can just like reopen the portal and get them back out. Although the more I think about that scene, the less it bothers me, because
that just makes
obviously
sense.
With like the quantum tunnel they made in the last movie, like there's no reason they wouldn't be able to go back down and get them, so it would be even dumber I think for them to not make it out. But
no, it makes sense. It's just confusing why they got so stressed out about it then.
Well, exactly. But the other thing that I was thinking of is like, I would have loved to have them go through all this like fighting and like arduous journey to like defeat Kang, and like it takes everything they have, and they like finally send him through like into the core, and they get back out into the real world, and then there's just another variant of Kang there as soon as they get back. That would have been so good. And I can't believe that they went through with like that ending narration of Scott like, oh my gosh, did I just like doom existence? Because like Kang said that if he didn't get out, like something horrible was coming, and we didn't let him get out. So like, are we causing that horrible thing to happen now? Like, what's going to happen? And like, literally to not pay it off at all in the movie was.
And then
like,
he's like, "Oh, it's fine."
He was
I
like, "Yeah, it's
anybody.
Probably fine." And obviously, it's not fine. Like, shit's going to hit the fan. But Dude, I was so waiting for some sort of reveal. And we get the end credit scene, but it's not the same. Like, we know the Council of Kings is out there. We know Loki Season 2 is coming. That was a great end credit scene also, by
the way.
That
was no new information, though.
Yeah, no new information. None. I wanted to, like, show me one more shot of, like, Kang brooding with his infinite probable selves in the probability field inside the core. That would have been so cool to know that he's, like, in there and, like, brooding and plotting a way out. Yeah. That would have been awesome.
I mean, all they had to do was while Scott was giving that monologue at the end, being like, oh, it's probably fine, as he's walking down the road, all you need is one of the guys sitting, like, on the side, turn with, like, his hood up, and you see that it's Jonathan Majors. Like, that's all that it takes.
That would have been sick.
It would have
been
so simple. And it would have been... And I thought they could have done something where, like, he traps them in there and he escapes. But also, them being trapped makes no sense, because in the first movie, he shrinks too small, which is how he gets to the quantum realm, because he shrinks. And then the way he gets out is he just grows back. And they still have their suits. Why does he not just grow back up?
Yeah, I mean, three of them, when they get sucked down, have suits like Cassie, Scott, and Hope all have
grow
suits.
Back,
they're like, oh no, we're trapped down here. But they're like, they could just be like, oh wait, literally we'll how just you go get out reopen of it. The portal and get
it's
them out.
It's not somewhere else. It's just very, very small. Like, at least that's what's been established. So,
yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, no, I think I agree with you that having some type of reveal at the end would have been way better. The fact that it just did wrap up, like, obviously he said, oh, he's still out there, and we know that he's still out there, but the fact that it did wrap up neatly was just
a little bit of, like, it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth at the end of what, again, overall I thought was a pretty decent movie. I think if I had to rate it, I would give it like mid six for the MCU.
That's about where I am.
Like,
I would say probably
6.6.
Yeah, I was at about a 6.4, 6.5. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say, of that rating, like, 6 points are from Kang by himself. Like, he was so good. Jonathan Majors, again, I know I started off the review by talking about him, but I cannot wait to see more of him. He is like a complete actor. Like, his facial expressions just showed so much pain. Like, Kang is such an interesting character in this movie. And for future installments, because, like, he does experience time differently. Like, he knows, he's been to the end of the timeline and sees the doom that's coming for everybody. Well, I say doom, but maybe it is Dr. Doom. But, you know, the tragedy that's coming for everybody, the darkness. And he knows that he's the only one who can stop it. But, you know, in his quest to, like, save his own timeline and, like, others, he has to sacrifice, like, thousands of other universes and multiverses and timelines.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he wants to conquer.
Does he actually believe
also,
that, though?
Well, that's the interesting thing, too, is, like, do we know if he's lying or not? Like, but his acting and, like, the facial expressions that he made really put me on edge as far as, like, is he being fully truthful about his motivation? And, like, is he, you know, just lying to get an advantage? Or does he actually believe he's, like, a... Like Thanos, he's like somebody chosen for a higher purpose that, you know, needs a strong will to do what others are incapable of doing. Like, man, he's just such an interesting character, and I'm looking forward to seeing a lot more of Kang.
Yeah, no, there's a reason I was excited for him when they announced he was going to be the next big bad. There's a reason he was pretty much 90% of the reason why I liked Loki, and he was 95% of the reason why this movie was at all good. And so, yeah, I'm just excited to see what they do with him, and I hope that they, do him justice. Do you think he's gonna pop up at all before, like, not counting end credit scenes, because we probably will see him somewhere? Do you think he's gonna pop up at all before Kang Dynasty, or do you think this is the last we see of him until then?
He has to. He
like
has
in
to
a
show
in
up.
A full movie
yes.
role.
Yeah, maybe not as like the primary antagonist. Although I would like to see that. I want to see, like, different versions of Kang just beating ass all over the place.
I want to see him win one before.
I want to see him win a bunch. I want to see, like, it should be, I really wanted, again, this to, like, to be a super hard-fought battle for the heroes. And maybe they do win eventually, but, like, as they finally defeat this version of Kang, like, with everything they have, and they already lost, like, maybe one or two, you know, characters along the way, like, they're bloodied and battered at the end, but hey, we did it. And then as soon as, like, they think it's over, a new version, like, steps in and is like, oh, sick, thanks for, like, taking out that weaker version of me, I appreciate the help. Like, he wasn't a worthy Kang anyways. And now I'm going to, you know, step in and do like an even more evil job. Yeah. That would have been so entertaining.
Yeah. But there's so much more to do than just shoot lasers and have force field. So if that's what he becomes, I'll be disappointed. I think there's more, so much more they can do. And I'm excited to see what it is. I'm going to try to not get my hopes too up above and beyond. But So yeah. I think a strong first full showing for him again, except for the way that it was resolved at the end. But on the whole, it gets me excited. So like if anybody out there, like my friend Nick, shout out Nick Smith, if you're listening, was asking me if it was worth going to see. And I was like, it's definitely going to be super important. I was like, you'd probably could wait and watch it on Disney Plus, like if you're not dying to see it anyway. Like, I don't know if it was fully worth like the $20 if you're not excited to see it to begin with. Like, if you're asking for convincing, probably not. But like, if you're definitely going to need to see it to know what's going on, which, you know, is just the case with the MCU now. But I'm definitely excited to see him back. And I'm just curious, like, what the heck it's going to look like. Because at this point, the number of heroes in the MCU has exploded to an unbelievable degree. Like, whatever we had in Infinity War we thought was a lot, it's, like, tripled since then. Like, every single side character is becoming a hero, is getting powers, which is something that I don't like, but is the reality. And so it's, like, how on earth are they possibly... Like, there's no way that all of the heroes are going to fight him, right? It's going to be have to be some section, like, on Earth or something like that. I just do not know how on earth they're possibly going to pull something like this off. If they try to fit, like, the Eternals, the Guardians, we'll see if they're still around by then, but, like, the current Earth Avengers, like, I don't even know how... Yeah, there's so many just, like, side heroes. Like, Katie from Shang-Chi, is she going to be there? She's probably going to kill him with a bow and arrow. One shot, he's going to be done.
I'll quit on the MCU if Katie kills Kang with a Talo bow and arrow.
She's the only character that might compete with me for Cassie for most annoying. But that's just
I don't want to spoil anything, but I have recently read the Secret Wars comic story. And
is Katie in there?
No, she's not in there, dude.
She's definitely a made-up character. She's not even in the comics. There's no way.
Of course not. To be honest, I haven't read any Shang-Chi comics.
There's no way she's actually a character.
I seriously doubt that she's not an original character for the MCU.
Yeah.
Anyways, Secret Wars has so many characters in it, and already also has a ton that we like haven't met yet. So they have a lot of work to do if they're going to like replicate that storyline. But if they pull it off, it's going to be unbelievable. But that obviously comes after Kang Dynasty. So the biggest things for me at this point is like we have a bunch of established characters. The, you know, Phase 4 did a you know, serviceable job of introducing kind of the new era of heroes. A lot of the movies were kind of viewed as weaker entries because they were, you know, setting up new characters instead of building on established old ones. Although some of the sequels to existing characters like also weren't super great. Looking at you, Love and Thunder. So I'm just really excited now that we kind of have the next roster set, even though it is widely expanded from, you know, the Infinity War grouping. Like there's just so much room for possibility here. And what I really need from the MCU is like, the villains to get like nailed.
And yeah.
Let me rephrase that because that sounded horrible. That's not what I was trying not to laugh. That's not what I want from the MCU. Let me rephrase entirely. I need the villains to be the focus, especially if Kang is going to be a ever present force from, you know, here until Kang Dynasty. And assuming they do Secret Wars the right way, like Doom is next up, and Doom is one of like my three favorite comic book characters of all time, and he needs to be excellently done as well. So
yeah,
like I said it before, I didn't need this movie to like blow me out of the water, but I needed Kang to hit, and he did. So
yeah,
that's our review for this movie. Is Kang is great. the movie's fine.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep.
And yeah, no, I'm excited to see what's coming. And I'm also excited because this is just a quick tidbit, but I saw that now that Bob Iger is back in as CEO of Disney just within the last month or so, apparently the MCU has delayed the Marvels and has delayed pretty much all of the shows. Like, we were supposed to get about 4 shows this year. The only ones we're getting now are Loki Season 2 and Secret Invasion. So a bunch of the other shows that were supposed to come out this year are getting pushed back and possibly canceled. We don't know for sure about them yet, but he has come out and said basically that, like, their approach over the last couple of years of quantity over quality is supposedly getting reversed, and they're going to be trying to put more effort and time into fewer projects in a tight time window. And so we'll see if that actually happens, but that is something that has me excited, because I think it was too much to keep up with, and too much clearly for them to keep a super high creative like quality to their stuff that they were putting out. Mm-hmm. And so I think a sort of different philosophy of, you know, just really putting a lot of care into the works that they're putting out, rather than just going for throw everything at the wall and see what sticks, has me excited. And so I think that, yeah, some of my concerns with the last couple of years of the MCU, a lot of them came from that. And so, yeah, I'm hoping that they can really just, you know, strap in and nail these next few movies and shows. And I didn't walk out of this movie excited about the movie, but I am excited still for the future of the MCU. And so, yeah.
That's a great point you're making. I think having more time in between entries, whether it be, you know, movies and TV shows, will be important as well, because, you know, for the last few years, there's kind of been no break in between projects, which, you know, has been somewhat enjoyable to watch as a viewer. Like, there's always something new, either premiering or like on the near horizon. But having more space will help build the anticipation more. I mean, we forget that throughout like phase one and phase two, there were maybe 2 movies coming out per year. I mean, it was big when we had the first year with 3 movies come out. And obviously with the TV shows, it's only gotten more and more clustered. But I think this is going to really help turn the MCU into kind of like an event viewing once again. So we'll see what happens with that. But I think up next is just Guardians in May.
May, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Far away.
No, not far at all. We've got other stuff coming out along the way as well, not MCU related. Mainly John Wick Chapter 4 comes out in just over a month, and I'm super stoked for that. Y'all know it was on our most anticipated of the year, so we're looking forward to that very much. But yeah, hopefully we'll get a couple other like surprises along the way that we don't have on our radar at the moment that we can review. But that'll wrap it up for our first like actual review of 2023. Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Heck yeah.
Quantumania. Like I said, Kang is great. Movie's fine. Y'all still probably got to see it if you plan on keeping up with the MCU in the future. Anyways, that'll do it for our review of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. We will catch you guys in our next episode when we talk about something that we have not decided yet. But we'll figure it out before we record next session. So keep you guys on your toes. But we'll talk to you then.
Deuces.
Peace.